Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON20 and you'll get 20% off your next order. All right, we got a great episode coming up for you today. It's Blake Griffin, friends. Welcome him in, another new member of the Brooklyn Nets. Doug and I, of course, are going to dive in on just the news itself, some of the other teams that were kind of sniffing around it, and what it is to have the buyout market somewhat early, ahead of the trade deadline even, come into fruition as these teams with big aspirations like Brooklyn look to fine-tune and tweak and add those little extra pieces that are going to get them over the championship hump. From there, though, Doug has potentially some concerning details around Blake Griffin's game, and maybe it's more just a response to the reaction that we've been seeing as the news was starting to build that Blake Griffin could come to Brooklyn, and tempering those expectations. Let's take that name off the back of the jersey and just look at the stats and set our standards accordingly. Last but not least, how is Blake Griffin's presence going to affect this roster, the rotations, and what could his role look like on Brooklyn? We dive into all of it, but before we do, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets Podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team. It's every day. I was doing that with my best radio voice because I'm Doug Norrie, owner-operator, DFSR. Got you covered for all your betting and DFS needs for the NBA. And that's Adam Armbrecht, silky smooth voice of the Brooklyn Nets on Sportscaster, one of their top NBA analysts as well. Buddy, how are we doing on a Sunday where it's going to be all about Blake Griffin?
You better believe it, man. Listen, I'm doing well, first and foremost. Obviously, the All-Star weekend, so we feel good to have a little bit of reprieve before we get into the second half of the season. And then ultimately, it's about Blake Griffin, the Nets acquiring him, and the continual Sean Marks tweaking of this roster in pursuit of a championship.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm going to, just from a point of timing and honesty here, we are recording this before the NBA All-Star game. So if something crazy goes down during the All-Star game between Team LeBron and Team Durant, besides just players not being able to play because they violated COVID protocols, so that's Embiid and Simmons. Besides that, if something crazy, if something does go down during the game, this is that, you know, and we don't mention it here, that's just the only reason, because we wanted to watch the game tonight, and then just kind of with timing. So I just want to let everyone sort of just in on that piece of it. But yeah, so it comes out basically on the dot. So right at, I believe it was either 4 or 5 o'clock, because I'm actually getting confused. Oh, no, it was 5 o'clock, was when the any teams were eligible to sign Blake Griffin after he had been bought out by the Detroit Pistons late last week. And basically at 5:01, the Nets had announced that he was going to be signing and coming to the team. So the mechanics of, let's just sort of what happened was, the Pistons wanted to get out of that contract. He had a pretty big contract left over from the days when he had come over from the Clippers in the trade. And they just saw either their path as not really lining up with where Blake Griffin now is a player, or, you know, in the youth movement that they have going there, that, you know, they just have a number of different young players that they probably wanted to get a look at. And he didn't, you know, for whatever reason, that wasn't really fitting. Maybe, and there was also a piece where probably wanting to do him maybe some late career service around, you know, his ability to go to a team that's contending, where the Pistons clearly aren't contending at this point. So I think there was a lot of different mechanics around what was happening for Detroit. I don't know if there was that much of a trade market for him either. There clearly couldn't have been, because otherwise he wouldn't have been bought out, right? Like, they clearly would have wanted to trade him. But the contract, I will say, though, you know, we're going to get to some of our reactions around the actual signing. The contract is a bit of an albatross in terms of getting to kind of trade him away, because once you're into that money, really at that point, it's very difficult to trade even under the best of circumstances, right? Like, you know, we saw over the summer, yeah, Russell Westbrook and John Wall trade for each other, mostly just because they're kind of like the only two dudes whose contracts fit together at wherever they were in sort of their career arc. So that is part of it with the Blake thing, right? He's the contract It may not be that Blake Griffin is untradeable. It's that the contract was very untradeable.
Right, and that's the same thing when you talk about, you mentioned Westbrook and Wall, right? Wall, it's not that Wall is an untradeable player, even though he's coming off of injuries. It was the contract. There's very few teams in the league that can take on that kind of money. Interestingly enough, though, when you just talk about Detroit, you know, remember, this is a team that didn't sign Christian Wood to, you know, a big deal in the offseason. And I just wonder, right, everybody around the league in general, I know you and I kind of poke a little bit of fun at Detroit over the course of the start of this season, saying, boy, like, what exactly is this roster going to be? Like, what is their intention here? And you let someone so young like that go. And to your point, I wonder if Detroit was just kind of tied to this money and this contract of Blake Griffin, unable to move it, and you try to make the best of it. And then ultimately, now you go full youth movement. And at least, you know, we hope, we'll see if Brooklyn's going to be one of the beneficiaries of that. But there's a lot of names like that floating around. And the Nets weren't the only team that was at least rumored early on here to be in the market for Blake Griffin when he was released. It seemed to get more and more concrete that the Nets were the front runners, but every contending team was kind of mentioned. You know, Lakers were thrown out there as being mentioned as a possible landing spot before ultimately it became clear that Brooklyn was going to be the top suitor.
Yeah, no, and I think that's what you kind of expect from a lot of these teams, too, that don't have much in the way of tradable assets at this point. When you have ascended to the mountaintop, as the Nets have, as the Lakers have, you know, throw the Clippers in there, too, Bucks to some degree, although mostly, you get to that point because you spent a lot of your money and you spent a lot of your assets to kind of get there. And at that point, buyout markets are a pretty fruitful way to begin rounding out your roster late in the season. And at this point, this is pretty early for the buyout market piece because we're not even at the trade deadline yet. But we're only at the All-Star break, literally. So to have the buyout market kind of start now, at that part's a little bit rare. But the part where contending teams are the ones rumored for this kind of, you know, name or talent, That's not surprising, because for a lot of these teams, that is one of the few mechanisms still left to begin to kind of, like I said, begin finalizing rosters as you head into the playoffs. Because again, you've traded away most of what it took to get there. Like, right, the Lakers traded away a lot of stuff to get Anthony Davis. The Nets traded away a lot of stuff to get James Harden. The Bucks traded a ton away to get Drew Holiday, right? Like, so you start looking at these teams that are all rumored around this thing, and it makes sense why they'd all be interested in it, because when it comes to making big other moves, their powder's not dry when it comes to that.
Well, so then it also makes it kind of fascinating too, right? Because all those teams you mentioned are ones that are in win-now mode and want to improve their teams. The big cost for a guy like Holiday, obviously the Bucks want to get over that hump. But then it kind of generates this really weird market to me around players like Griffin, or we hear about Drummond, or even when Boogie Cousins was, you know, all of these names. And by the way, a lot of them have, you know, name recognition, I feel like, because they've been around for so long and they could be different versions of themselves and their style of game by this point of their careers. But then all of a sudden you get this frenzy of the best, like there's something, I say it's almost like oxymoronic that you have the best teams that are the most likely to be there to win championships also fighting over guys that aren't, you know, they're not at the peak of their powers and yet could be this crucial little extra piece. And everyone is in the waters trying to fight and scrum and see where they can best grab that extra component. I don't know. I find that element of, I don't know if you find that as interesting as I do every year, because it, you know, guys that can't seem to necessarily have larger roles or aren't having the best of seasons other places. I think Kevin Love is going to fall into this if he gets back on the court healthy at some point, right?
Let me just stop here for one second. This is what I mean about the difference between a player and the contract. Right, like this is where these two things diverge. Kevin Love is probably still useful, and I mean, he hasn't played this whole season, so but I know what you mean. It's never that Kevin Love himself hasn't been traded. It's Kevin Love's skill level compared to the contract that's not tradable.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like
it's tricky.
This is what makes it very difficult in the NBA, is that you get tied to this money, especially like these maxes and the super maxes and all the other stuff that goes out for so many years, and for a lot of players goes out well past their prime. When that happens, the money does become a point where, again, you're going to fight over the player once the player has cleared the buyout, because now it's kind of a blank slate and you're not worried. You can maybe pay him fair market value, right? The problem is, before that, you can't pay him. You're getting him so far below market value. No, wait, above market value, sorry, because... like someone else made the sort of you know, mistake to sign them to such. It wasn't a mistake at the time. I get why these teams do it, but they made the mistake of giving them all the money at the outset for all these many years, and the decline was rapid. The decline was more rapid than the money. And the money stayed the same, right? like it's just the opposite of like Wooderson and Dazed and Confused when he's like, you know, these guys keep getting younger and I still stay the same age. Like, that's just not what's happening with these guys. Like,
it's not true for professional athletes trying to get the last drop of juice out of it.
Exactly. It's like your money stays the exact same. And then what happens with every single person in the world. Eventually you decline, unless you're LeBron James. So it's just one of these things where the player unfortunately gets tied to whatever the contract is, and that is what makes it seem like they're maybe at a different stage skill-wise, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it makes the evaluation process hard, too, when players are coming in like this. But thankfully, from a Brooklyn Nets standpoint, this was a release, and then we're able to just bring in Blake Griffin on our own terms, yet to be divulged as to what the specifics are of the contract that he signed with Brooklyn. But thankfully for us, given our restrictions in the cap, we were able to do this without having to make a trade or without having to find assets to package up. We talked last time about Spencer Dinwiddie and what could be on the horizon for him, right? The Nets are able to accomplish this without having to do anything other than welcoming in Blake Griffin.
All right, we're going to get to some reactions about Blake Griffin, the player here. We're going to get to some reactions about the Blake Griffin as a fit as he joins the Brooklyn Nets. So we have a ton to talk about with this. It's weird to call it a signing because it's in the middle of the season, but a ton to talk about with this signing. First, have to talk to you about our friends over at BetOnline.ag. Look, you know what it's like to get bets in the games right now. You want to find someone you trust. You want to be able to get the best action you can. You want to have the most options available. Also, it's all there for you on Bet Online. It's the fastest and easiest way to get your bets on in sports action online. Covers you for every single sport you can imagine. NBA, of course, college basketball heading into March Madness, NHL on the ice every night. It's got the award shows too. You got the Oscars in there. You want to get a little bet down on whatever your favorite movie was from this past season? Bet Online has that as well. Plus, just real updated odds, props. Basically, like I said, on anything you can imagine, news as well, so you can keep up with everything you need to know about in the sports world. Right now, you head on over to betonline.ag and you sign up. It's free to sign up, but if you want to make a deposit, no, they're going to give you a 50% welcome bonus on that first deposit, but you have to use the promo code LOCKEDON, just like our podcast network. It's a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, but you got to use the promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
And of course, friends, we're covering everything you need to know about the Brooklyn Nets and the recent Blake Griffin signing. But what about the rest of sports? Now, the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports needs that you need, news that you need, and the needs that you need to know every morning in under 20 minutes. They just broke down Big Ben coming back to Pittsburgh and restructuring. I'm sure they'll have some chatter around what Blake Griffin could mean for the Brooklyn Nets. Subscribe to Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. So now we've covered the fact that Blake Griffin is a Brooklyn Net. Let's get into some opinions here, though, Dougster. Take away the money, right? Take away the big contract and what Detroit was doing or not doing. Where do you stand on Blake Griffin at 31 years old, at this point of his career, joining the Brooklyn Nets? What is your opinion of the player?
Okay, so to start, I'm very glad the Nets did not give up anything to get this player. I'm going to start there. That would have been a problem, I think.
The cost was right.
Yeah. I think if you take away the name Blake Griffin and you take away the historical sort of reference point you have for this player, who at one time was among the most unique and explosive players in all of basketball for a time.
The Channing Tatum of the NBA, as we say.
That was like a Magic Mike. I didn't think you were going to go that direction, but okay. I think that it's easy to get wrapped up into what Blake Griffin used to be, jumping over cars at dunk contests, being able to explode basically from anywhere onto the court and get to the rim, posterizing Timothy Mozgov. I mean, the guy has just an endless trail of just almost like borderline iconic moments when he was in his prime. So I think when we think about Blake Griffin, it's easy to think about him in that way and to get really excited. I will say, if his name was not Blake Griffin and you have watched him over the last 2 years, you'd be hard-pressed to think of a lot of reasons about why you would bring him in unless you thought he could turn back the clock in some way, which doesn't, with every passing game, seems less and less likely. And I was not excited to hear that this was going to be a signing. If I am not excited to think that if he's going to, in his current form, and I'll go through some of the reasons why I'm saying this, but in his current form, I would hate it if he took away minutes from almost anybody that we've been getting excited about in the short term, unless there was, again, some kind of turning back the clock moment. And I just don't know. This is a player, his skill set, in a lot of ways, is not meant to age gracefully into the into like his NBA heyday. This isn't like a Dirk Nowitzki. This isn't a guy who can kind of play for a long time, because for a long time Blake Griffin's game was built on explosiveness. I get he's, you know, he's made changes in it, and we'll go through what some of those changes are. But the numbers that he was putting up in Detroit, and it combined with some of the eye test stuff, it's so clear that he is not that guy anymore, that and it's like to an alarming degree almost. So that's my initial thing. I'll go through some of the numbers in a second, but my initial reaction is, if his name was not Blake Griffin and he did not have years of this other thing that he had made a totally reasonable and worth it name off of, right? That stuff was not overrated, like the stuff he used to do. If his name was Blake Griffin, there's no chance, if you looked at his current form, you'd be anywhere excited to bring him in and have him start taking minutes off the roster.
And so you said, as you mentioned right there, minutes getting taken off the roster. We're going to get into that in a little bit here about where he fits in or how we think he'll be utilized. I'm not going to sit here and say that I look at him as X just yet here. But I do think that you mentioned it in there. There's the type of player that he was early on in his career and all those big flashy plays, and there's the player that he is now. I do have a level of optimism around, if you shrink his sample size down, depending on what his minute share looks like, that you might be able to get the best version of what he is now out of him. And you know, and it's kind of that product of, don't be on a bad team in Detroit, be on one of the best teams, if not the best team, with the Brooklyn Nets, and be surrounded by that much more talent. And I think that you can maximize what you get out of them. Now, you know, listen, it's almost ironic or funny or interesting, fascinating, that it ends up being DeAndre Jordan and Blake Griffin are going to be on this Brooklyn Nets roster, those partners in Lob City. And listen, you know, DeAndre has still showed that he can do a little bit of that now with James Harden at the helm. I'm not expecting Blake Griffin to do that. I'm not expecting him to turn back into that thing.
Good.
I'd be a little bit shocked. I'd be shocked if he was, because I think that phase of his game is gone, and the injuries that he had over his career. I think that you can see the very stark difference, by the way, too, right? DeAndre Jordan, if my recollection is correct, he's never really had any, you know, serious injuries in his career. Mm-hmm. Blake Griffin has dealt with some things over the course of it, and you can see that's taken his toll. That being said, he's reshaped himself in a different way, and I think there is value here for Brooklyn. Although, before, and what you can get into those numbers, but I do want to throw out, and I feel like you maybe kind of answered already, but Twitter in general, a lot of people were kind of hyping this up as the news was breaking.
Oh, yeah.
And to, I guess to your point, this is everyone kind of falling under the spell of the name Blake Griffin and not, you know, Adam Armbrecht gets signed to the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, that's my take. Clearly, Nets Twitter was very excited about it going in, for the most part, to the point where I kind of didn't even want to ring in on it, because I was thinking, let's just wait to see what happens here, because I felt like I was going to be on such the other side of it. Not like I'm one of the top 150 people on Nets Twitter or more, but or even our account. So I'm not, you know, trying to drum it up as to a place where we aren't. But I was just like, oh man, this is like, people just want to be excited about this, and let's let everyone be excited about it. And I think that's totally fine. It's more born out of my concern. Like I said, I think people are getting excited about the name. They're remembering all those iconic moments, like I mentioned before. There's a very good chance that most fans have not watched a lot of Pistons games this year, and rightfully so. Like, why would you? But I'll say this, I went back. I've watched a decent amount of Pistons this year, and I'll just go back. But I'll go back to a game that Nets fans probably did see when they played the Nets. Okay, there was the game that they lost, and it was the game that basically turned around the entire season for the Nets so far, because it was an embarrassing loss to that Detroit team. The loss was not because of Blake Griffin. That loss was
Blake Griffin's a lucky charm, then, though, right? That's why they got him.
Yeah, he must have been. But the lack of explosiveness, even in this game, was apparent. And lack of explosiveness slash, I'm not sure what exactly he's bringing to the table in terms of reshaping his game, right? Because So for starters, James Harden guarded Blake Griffin this entire game. It was not when they shared the court, at least early on. It wasn't a cross-matching situation. This is just what they were doing. Harden was the assignment on Blake Griffin, which you'd say, okay, well, if you look to the Dallas Mavericks game where they got when they were undersized and they had Kristaps and he was just abusing whatever guard they put on him, right? Like over and over and over again, shooting over him, posting him up, taking him down to the block. They either couldn't do it or weren't trying to do that with Blake. A few times they tried to isolate him high post, foul line extended. It was basically useless. He wasn't able to do anything. That was against Harden a couple times. They got Kyrie into a switch on him. And it was just a situation where even though they were getting sort of the switch that they wanted, Blake wasn't really able to do anything with it. And that's a little concerning when you're looking at a player that if you got the old Blake Griffin into these, you would fight actively to not get him into the switch if you were on defense, because you'd be in such big trouble, right? Like he'd blow by, he'd rise up over you. He still, has developed sort of an outside shooting game, but those things just weren't happening at all. And it's because he just doesn't have that game in him right now. Okay. So that's part of it. Maybe you want to say, oh, it's a young team that he's playing with. They're not the requisite pieces to put around them. I could hear that from like just an X's and O's schematic piece where maybe they got the switch that he wanted, but the other guys aren't threats and it's, you can bring a double a little bit quicker. Yeah. Okay. That's probably part of it also. But the explosiveness is so clearly gone that he's going to need to lean into other parts of his game that I think he might have, but there hasn't been a big part of they really haven't been on display for a while. By the way, explosiveness, Do you know when the last time Blake Griffin dunked a basketball was?
2016?
No, 2019, but still. it's been a while.
Oh.
Like he hasn't dunked the basketball.
I almost diminished that, though, by the way, because
it's okay.
Since 2019 16 is a games, long
he has not
time.
Dunked. He hasn't dunked the basketball. Like, this is... Just think about that, right? Think about how many games Blake Griffin would have gone without dunking in the past. Now, you need to be set up. There needs to be some context here. But it just hasn't happened. That's like 15 games. He's played 38, and that was only one dunk over the last, that was one in the last, 30 games or something like that. Like, this is...
You'd be talking about him, not going a quarter without having a dunk, right? I mean, that's where he was.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, this is my only thing. I'm trying to caution Nets fans, be like, just don't think that guy is walking through the door. The other numbers, by the way, I'm going to roll through some of these numbers. The 3-point shooting has been bad. 32% for 3-point shooter on volume this year. So it's not like they're trying to get him 3-pointers. He's taking over 6 per game this season. He shot 24% from 3 last year. So he improved. Those are each on 6 points a game, or excuse me, 6 attempts a game. The minutes were up this season, but the scoring's way down. Okay, you bring in Jeremy Grant and some other pieces, maybe the usage has gone down a little bit. So I'm willing to explain down the point decrease because he has taken fewer attempts. But again, like I said, the 3-point shooting has decreased. And if you want to look at the lack of explosiveness and what I was saying a second ago about what they were doing with him defensively with Harden and the other guards, is that another probably huge warning sign is that his free throw attempts have dropped off a cliff over this year. He is not getting to the free throw line. So what does that mean? It means he's not getting to the rim, right? He's not getting to the rim in a way that defenders feel challenged by him. 3 attempts per game this season on 31 minutes. So the minutes have increased and the attempts are easily the lowest of his entire career. And it's easy to see why it happens because of the way he's playing. He's playing away from the basket. It's not really a threat. No one is worried about it at all, i.e. put your guards on him. And he has some vision and stuff. You don't understand what I'm saying here? Like, this is where, these are my concerns. I'm not just making it up, just looking at the numbers. Like, it's the numbers plus the eye test that are telling you a story of a player who is not the Blake Griffin from 4 years ago.
And 71% at the line as well on those limited selections. If I wanted to help your case even more, his free throw percentages are even going down on a smaller sample size. And I do. Listen, again, I'm not in that camp of, here we go, lock up the championship. This was the missing link. But, and we'll get to it in a second here, I see a very specific value for him on this roster, and I see it in a way that overall does make this team better, makes the rotations potentially stronger as well, and helps create better first and second units.
All right, we'll talk about that in a second. First, got to talk to you about our friends over at Built Bar. We've been talking to you about Built Bar, and it's no joke. The NBA group chat that we've got going on, all it is Built Bar. It's a little bit of NBA, and it's a lot of Built Bar when it comes down to the flavors. It makes sense. It's the best-tasting protein bar on the market for a while now. It's an amazing low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber protein bar with 100% chocolate on all bars. You're like, how could that be healthy? It just is. Built Bar, absolutely one of the most healthy snacks you can grab when you're on the go. Right now, we're trying to figure out which Built Bar is the best because it's Built Bar Madness. Today's matchup is cookies and cream versus coconut almond. Buddy, do you have a preference there?
Knock it off. Coconut almond completely. It's the right balance. A little bit of that sweetness, a little bit of that coconutty flavor. Come on. That's a deep sea. That's a deep sea going deep in the tournament.
I'm not surprised. That was kind of a layup because like that's the coconut one is the one the group chat's just been absolutely going nuts for. BuiltBar.com or at Built_Bar on Twitter. Right now, you use the promo code LOCKEDON20 to get 20% off your next order. That's LOCKEDON20, 20% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. Check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar. BuiltBar.com, LOCKEDON20 to get your 20% discount.
Cade Cunningham, Evan Mobley, Jalen Suggs, how much do you really know about these potential NBA stars of tomorrow? If you want to know more, then you need to be subscribing to the Locked On NBA Draft Podcast. They've got prospect scouting. They have draft rumors, mock drafts, and full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credential draft experts. Subscribe today and follow Locked On NBA Draft. So, now, beyond everyone's hype about what they think he is or isn't or whatever, I started to consider, now he's on the team, how are we going to use him? What is he going to be for the Brooklyn Nets roster? If you want to poke your way around on some of the major sports sites when they update the rosters, they put Blake Griffin in as the starting center. I don't think that that's the case, so may want to slow your horses there. I'll put it this way. I'd be concerned if he was into the starting role on this roster, but you're mentioning about stats before, and I went over and did the little Raptor rating, 538 Sports, they have it up there. I do find it interesting that if you go by these numbers, and there's a specific one to think about here, but we kind of know what DeAndre Jordan is. What you may not realize with Jordan, he's borderline just barely a positive on the defensive end. So that's a good thing. He's a minus 3.3 offensive Raptor rating. So he's a big in the minus for you right now overall for the team. If you go in and you take a look at Blake Griffin, for whatever it's worth, he's essentially a net neutral. He's a slight minus offensively. He's a slight positive defensively. He's right there, minus 0.1. So he's a net neutral player. The reason why I bring that up is because as small as this sample size may be, when I pull up one Nicholas Claxton,
oh, yeah,
he's giving you a plus 1.2 on the offensive end, and that's cool. But you highlighted it last time. We were getting really hyped about what he can be defensively. He currently, and this is over a 76-minute sample size, is a plus 5.7 on the defensive end. So the way I look at this is Blake Griffin represents one half of DeAndre Jordan's body. That's what I think he's supposed to be coming into the Brooklyn Nets. I think that if you're the Nets coaching staff, you wanted to see what Claxton was going to be. You were feeling pretty good about him. Now you get the sample size and you say, yes, this guy is athletic. He can do a lot of things defensively for us that nobody else on this roster can do. He's going to slowly but surely start to ramp up his minute shares. DeAndre Jordan, even if Blake Griffin is not the most, not the same athlete he once was, if you put him on the floor instead of DeAndre Jordan, I think you're at least going to get marginally better defensive presence, better ability to range out onto the perimeter defensively, and then even offensively. The three-point shooting numbers may not be good, but again, I'll go to what we mentioned about Gatlin talking about Claxton, the James Harden effect. I think that at the very least, Blake Griffin, every one of the shots that he takes now on the Brooklyn Nets is going to be as wide open as it's been going back to taking lobs in, with the Clippers. So I think the expectations are not going to be terribly high for him. I think that the opportunities are going to be aplenty, and I don't even hate as well. Another little feather over top of him that I think falls into the Claxton category offensively, I think that he can also be facilitate, right? So it's a different dynamic than what you get out of DeAndre Jordan, and my belief is this signing is the signal that DeAndre Jordan is slowly going to start to fade here in terms of his minute shares. Because if you think about, unless Jeff Green's injury is more serious than we realize, I think the Nets coaching staff understands we are better when we're kind of a smaller, more athletic, spread you out team that puts Jeff Green in there at the five at times. You can put Kevin Durant there if you want to for stretches. We've been able to utilize Bruce Brown. And I think that Blake Griffin represents that. A little more athleticism and a little bit more value at in every functional in every functional piece that you want from a 4-5. That's what I think he will be over, say, a DeAndre Jordan and what his current limitations are.
Yeah, I think when you look at it that way, you can get excited, so to speak, about what he's going to bring to the table. He doesn't overlap too much with what they have already. So it's not like they're bringing in some like one-dimensional center like DeAndre is, right? Okay, they're not bringing. And I think the fact that you mentioned Claxton in here, I think the fact that Claxton is still probably ramping up in his conditioning and minutes means that for at least the short term, you're not going to be one will not come at the you know there's not going to be a mutually exclusive sort of thing happening here early on, because it looks like there's only 15 to 17 minutes available for Claxton, even in the best of times, just because of how they want are sort of like managing, just like load managing his run, right? So I don't think right now that's going to be the case. And I think if you're looking at, you know, does Blake give you a bigger body with more experience, you know, clearly has more, you know, just like just more on-court experience than almost anybody else they have, then for sure, in that sense, it's almost definitely an upgrade over what they're bringing if you're looking to swap out DeAndre's minutes for him. And I think if you look at it in that direction, from in terms of a flexibility standpoint, what you can do more offensively, I think there you're like, okay, that's clearly probably an upgrade for it's definitely probably an upgrade offensively because it allows you to do a few more things. I'm still a little skeptical on this defense thing. I watched some video of him, like his perimeter defense. It's really not very good. Like other teams do kind of want to.
But again, Is it better than DeAndre Jordan?
I mean, it's at least more flexible. It's at least more versatile. So
there you
I'll put it that way.
Yeah, that's almost. It wasn't quite better, but hey, it's something else. So, but that's how you really get to the silver lining, friends. But again, if it's marginally better or just slightly more capable in switches and picking up defensively, I think these are. I always love the phrase, right? Winning in the margins. I think that that's what Blake Griffin can do for you in a certain sample size, and that moves the needle ever so slightly. Slightly, especially when you think about, again, winning a championship. You want horses in the stable to be able to use in versatile ways. That's what Griffin is. Veteran, has experience, and at the very least is going to understand what is asked of him, and he's not coming in the door. He gave back over $13 million to leave Detroit. So he's coming in the door for a specific reason, to win a championship. That's what he wants to accomplish. So you're going to get the best version of the most buy-in from Griffin to be that version of himself.
I will say too, this is just human nature. There's any reasonable person, no matter what kind of money has been put out, because once money, like you remove money from the baseline, I think almost any reasonable person would probably do this in a vacuum, is that it's just going to be much more fun to play with the Brooklyn Nets than it was the Detroit Pistons. Like I think from like an energy level and just from like a total commitment buy-in piece, I think that the part where he probably found it tough to like get motivated on a day-to-day basis to play there, that's a real thing. And I wouldn't begrudge that being the case either, because like you kind of look around, you take a look at the landscape, you think, where am I really going here at this stage of my career? Am I going to be able to get up for every single game in a, like a really explosive kind of way? I don't know, probably not. And we've seen more than a few examples of veterans who looked a little long in the tooth go to new situations and sort of just get a little bit rejuvenated, right? Mm-hmm. Like Nick Batum right now for the Clippers, the guy basically sat out all season last year, was buried, goes to the Clippers, goes to a little more of a veteran team, got a little bit more on the line there, and all of a sudden it's turned back the clock into a functional player. Is he like the guy that signed like this mini max 2 years ago? No, clearly not. But again, that's not what we're talking about anymore. We're not talking about the money plus the player. We're only talking about the player now. So I think from that standpoint, right, does it stand to reason that we're going to see an increase on some of these stats from an efficiency standpoint? Almost definitely, right? Like you can't, like you mentioned the James Harden thing. You really can't play with these guys and not get better efficiently, because all the other attention is on the other dudes, right? So if you're not getting,
impressive if you did,
yeah, right, exactly. If you're getting less efficient, then it's probably just truly over, right? But like other than that, you're going to get just better looks all around. So from that standpoint, I'm encouraged that it can improve. My encouragement is that his numbers will improve on what they were because the situation is just much better.
My encouragement is it can't possibly get worse.
Well, it really can't.
No. And there are things there within that do add up and say that it should get a little bit better. But again, within reason, I'll just for me, I know at least Brooklyn Nets fans approach this as, you know, understand what's walking in the door. If you do that, then it's okay. It's the same thing that you and I have said about DeAndre Jordan, right? Like, we get frustrated with him. Also, I don't have a high benchmark for what I want him to be doing at this point of his career. Right. So don't set an unachievable bar for Blake Griffin, and you won't be disappointed by him.
Yeah, let me put it this way. Don't set your bar to be Lob City Blake Griffin. I think that's it. I think we all walk in with a non-Lob City Blake Griffin, and we look at him like, longer, more finesse, a little longer in the tooth. It's more of a finesse game. He's going to probably get much better looks. He's not going to be playing up and over the rim anymore, so don't worry about that part. But if he's going to just be a bigger body that can like sort of bang into some bigger switches and has a little bit more versatility around the perimeter in terms of just like not getting totally caught flat-footed like we've seen some of the other defenders, then yes, I think that that is a fine thing. I'm just going to go back to like the last segment where we were talking about some of his numbers. I'm saying that a lot in response to this, making sure we curb some of the enthusiasm on what's walking in through the door. That's all, right? It's like, do I still think that there's something to mine here? For sure. Has there been enough with Sean Marks and company's decision making over the short term and the long term to have like almost full buy-in on the moves they make? Yes, of course. These guys have made way more correct moves than incorrect moves at this point. So you have to just trust that process. It was mostly born out of, hey, remember the guy that jumped over the Hyundai or whatever that was 3 years ago? That guy's not walking back through the door. We're looking at a different situation now.
And with that, welcome to Brooklyn, Blake Griffin. We can't wait to see you on the floor.
All right, we're going to get out of here. Rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. Blake Griffin, obviously, we're your number one fan club. In case you got all the way to the end. Just kidding. I don't feel bad about going this direction with the Blake Griffin signing, but I do want to – look, I'm nothing if not a realist, and I want to give my very real opinions about like my first kind of take on certain stuff, and that was just it. And so still happy to have him here. Just want to make sure everyone's expectations are rightfully tempered. With that in mind, like I said, rate and review the podcast wherever you listen. 5 stars or bust really helps the numbers continue to climb. Wherever you listen to the podcast, rate and review it.
Rumor had it, as the days came to an end in Detroit, Blake Griffin could be quoted to say, "If I ever start referring to these as the best years of my life, remind me to kill myself. Pink."
Oh, Randall Pink Floyd, one of the all-time great American posts. We'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.